Welcome to episode one of Goodpreneurs, where it is our mission to help you to be and become a better founder. So what we are currently seeing is that during the ongoing Corona situation, investments are going down. Both business angels and VCs will most likely keep their money tight. Of course, everyone says that they are open for business, but our hypothesis is that deals will be at least postponed. Especially if you're an early stage startup or if you were just looking to raise your next round, this can be a stressful situation. In this episode, we want to give you an alternative, bootstrapping. Our expert is founder and serial entrepreneur Christoph Behn. Christoph bootstrapped Kartenmacherei to become Europe's leading e-commerce player for personalized stationery and has built the Better Ventures Group, which invests in young and upcoming startups. Christoph, glad you are here. You are well connected in the business angel scene. What is the current mood?
Thank you for having me. I guess every signal you get is like most VCs, investors, not necessarily business angels, but like rather larger investors, they mostly focus now on portfolio restructuring, let's say, or they have their eyes all on the companies in their portfolio and not on new deals. Obviously, they all say they're open, which is good. But I think we're in a situation where it's unclear, you know, how the future will look like. Is there any recession is coming, or like rather like how deep will the recession be? That's probably the right question. Which sectors will profit and which will lose? Which is it's pretty hard to see because there's so many you know influence on different sectors and then cross influence them that it's I think no one really can forecast this one. So what you see in the situation, and that's like almost everyone is telling us that, and you read this in a lot of articles, a lot of VC Twitter chats and so on, you see exactly that. You know, people say, hey, we just wait, we don't do the deals, we wait for the situation to calm down, you know, there's unclarity about the right price level. I guess that's the right situation, or that's how it feels now. And I think what you get from the founder side is that we talk to a lot of founders, and what you see there's you know, on the one hand, they just don't get the response anymore. Then the others get response like, hey, they were in between a, let's say, raising around, you know, some term sheets moved away, let's say, or like price tag went down. So it all got more complicated, right? Or there's more restrictions into the deals. You know, like the terms worsened at least during the last days. And it's probably not the best way, the best time to go out and then try to get money from investors. And I think there's no big difference in between business angels and VCs. VCs obviously look more into the portfolio, but like business angels, I guess, have the same kind of wait for it. Like there's no pressure. And business angels don't have the pressure to invent. Like they don't have a fund. They only have their own money nest normally. And so there's no pressure. So in this situation, you would just, you know, you wouldn't risk it, right? Because it's your own money. So that's like what a lot of business angels do.
Okay. So let's assume I'm a startup. It's hard to raise money. What can I do instead? What are my options?
Well, I mean, if you're not able to raise money at the moment, which is like will be very tough during the next weeks and months, the one thing that's obvious is like you need to get along with what you have, right? You need to strip down the cost, you know, reduce your burn if you have one burn rate, like, and I think you know I would propose to do bootstrapping. I mean, I've done bootstrapping for the last 10 years, and with a lot of pros and cons to bootstrapping, but in this situation, it's almost like the only way to actually do it, right? It's the only feasible way. And that's actually something that you hear also from investors, right? It's a funny thing because they normally wouldn't like propose for you to go bootstrapping. But like, especially business angels, I've read articles on that one where they actually tell, hey, consider bootstrapping, right? So yeah, I think that's the thing to look in. Otherwise you just stop it or wait or, but I mean, if you have an idea, if you're working on it, I think the situation to found a business, to start a business, you know, is pretty cool because there are a lot of new problems arising and there's a lot of dynamics into new technology, into new things that, you know, that were like not really picking up during the last months and years. And due to Corona, that's I think the positive side. There's a lot of opportunity now. Right. And so don't miss out on the opportunity, but consider like other ways like that have been maybe not as not as prominent during the last months and years due to a lot of capital in the market, right?
Yeah, I think there are still a lot of opportunities for founders to go out there and get started. Let's go back to your experience. You just said you've built a company completely bootstrapped for the last 10 years. Could you run us through your bootstrapping experience? What did you do? What worked? What didn't work? Can you just briefly run us through the success story of Karten Maharai?
Sure, I can. Maybe one sentence beforehand, and to give that, like, to frame it a little bit. Always when I talk about bootstrapping, there's one perception, and I think that's true. Bootstrapping is just not glamorous, right? So you're not going to get into any article because you did a financing round, right? So there's no one talking about you. There's no VC backing you. There's no one you clapping you on your shoulder and saying, "Hey, you did that really great." Despite maybe some customers, and that's a good thing. But it's just not glamorous, right? And I run you through my thoughts on bootstrapping, which is probably not 100% of what you can do for bootstrapping. And I think the first most important thing is doing bootstrapping. If you're short on money, just don't spend money, right? And then don't spending money means, don't build like a huge software, but try to prototype it, right? Go lean and simple, that's how I call it. Meaning, read the Lean Startup book and try to really, and that's another book from Ash Maurer, Running Lean. There's a lot of material online. You don't even have to buy the book because that costs a lot of money as well. But, get the material, read it through, and really try to run in a lean startup mode. And, most people will tell you now, yeah, but I can't prototype everything. There's people out there who prototype everything. So like even Google Glasses, they prototyped. So there's no excuse for not prototyping. It's obviously you don't get like 100% version with a prototype, but you get close and you get customer feedback. And I think that's the most important thing. Get close to the customer. All right, do it in a lean way, and then consider like really, really doing it simple. So put more effort into getting a simple product, a simple solution to a problem you want to solve. Right, really try to figure out a problem, then really try to figure out a solution, and really do that in a very simple way. Right, and really close to the customer. And then the thing is, the moment you add complexity, it's getting more and more expensive, and you need more people, and it's getting more and more expensive, and you lose track, right? So all these things really, really start lean and simple in the first place, which obviously, from my perspective, is anyhow, it should be the default case to start, and lots of people actually do that. So lots of people say, yeah, that's what I do anyhow. So that's cool. Then you're on the right way, at least from my perspective.
Okay, so one aspect, lean, staying close to the customer, and trying to be really creative on how to build a solution. Any other advice? Some examples you did during your journey at Karten Maharai, for example, for going lean?
Well, when I started Karten Maharai 10 years ago, obviously lean didn't really exist as a concept like this. And I think it came out a year later. There was a lot of, talks on it from Steve Blank and everything, like all the lean startup culture, came from like around Steve Blank and then Eric Ries. So I'd say I went kind of like lean, but not, I wouldn't have called it lean, and no one called it lean at that time. So when I go back, so we talked to a lot of customers, obviously, right? Get to your customer. We had a problem ourselves and we tried to solve it and then figured out if everyone else is like having the problem as well. But what we did is we didn't really solve a new problem we didn't solve a problem that existed and hadn't been solved before. And we went into an existing market and did it better. And that's something that I would propose. If you consider where you start, right? Think about the business model you want to do. Obviously, you might have now a problem and a solution and you really want to build that idea. Then consider how you can do that maybe in a different way or a way where you can start differently. But if you have the time to consider the business model, think about something where you actually can improve something where there's already a market, right? Obviously, you have to do then, your improvement has to be a lot to gain share, but at least the market is existing. When I think about doing things simple, I give you one one story from when I started. So when I started Card Maharain, it's all about designing, like customers design their cards online. We have templates, and then they put their personal details like names, the weight of the child, for example, if it's a birth announcement, right, and some pictures and so on. And I came from a consulting company, like a Bain company, and I was used to work with PowerPoint. So what I wanted in the first place, I wanted to have like an online PowerPoint, like lots of different functions, features, and so on. I would say it was plus 100 features. But I had a budget constraint. Like I had a couple of thousand euros for building that tool with a freelance developer. And so I pushed all the requirements over to the developer, and he said like, hey, that's cool, but you told me like you got 10K. And that's going to cost like at least 5 to 10 times as much. And I was like, okay, that's not going to work. So what are we going to do? Can we do it in a different way? He said, look, the only thing that works, by the way, here's a book, right? Don't make me think. Maybe you read that one. So that's interesting input. You know, the idea is, I mean, reduce the requirements. Yeah, that's good. Okay, I think about it. So I had to prioritize. And the funny thing is like, so I went down from like 100 to 20 requirements. We built that thing. And due to the very small amount of requirements, it was super simple to use for the customer, right? But it took me a lot of effort, obviously, to figure out which features I wanted to have, and I wanted to then at least to have these features super crazy simple and really good working. And that's what we built. So we built a very simple design tool, and to be honest, even until today, like 10 years later, we don't even have the 100 features that I wanted to have in the first place. So it was something like, it actually became part of our success and part of our DNA to be very simple. Yeah, that's just one example on being simple, right?
That's fantastic. That's really interesting. Would you say that coming from the consulting background, where, let's put it gently, money was often probably not the issue. How was the transition into being a bootstrap founder?
Well, first of all, I mean, I talked a couple of times in front of students, right? And I said like, hey, it's the best time to go after university because you're used to not to spend a lot of money, right? Once I was like 5.5 years at Bain. So I was kind of like used to spend not a lot, but more money than like a student, like after university. Because I mean, obviously I earned a lot of money. I worked a lot, but I also learned a lot of money. The good thing that I did is I saved a couple of thousand euros from my bonus, and I put that on the bank account before I started my own business, and I took that money. Not everyone has the chance to actually do that, but that's what I did, right? So, but on the other hand, what I did is what I had to cut down on all the costs that I typically would used. So I didn't go to a discounter like for 3 years at least, after like when I started at Bain. And we decided to do that again. We didn't do any vacation for like, I think it was like 4 years, right? I didn't buy trousers for 2 years. So maybe I bought enough beforehand, but at least, I mean, 2 years beforehand, I would have bought like one or two trousers any half year. So I didn't do that. And it's just some very practical examples. And, you know, sometimes you really have to look into your personal P&L to figure out where you're actually spending. And I mean, one thing that I always see is like people short on money, they order a lot of food and a delivery service. I guess if you go to a restaurant and even if they deliver it to you, it's just like probably like 4 to 5 times as expensive as you would do it on your own and just buy the components and you cook something. Obviously, cooking something takes time and so on, you know, but maybe that's something you should consider. And that's something probably even a student can consider, right? So really cut down your expenses, because that's where you spend it on, right? Rather spend it or not really spend it on anything else, but just, you know, prolong the time you have with the amount of money that you have at the moment, mm-hmm. or that you can earn on side jobs, let's say, right?
Mm-hmm. You just mentioned an interesting point. You said, okay, do the cooking by your own. It costs time, but it saves you money. Would you say that this is a rule of thumb you could also apply to your business when you're bootstrapping?
Absolutely. So I guess when I think about bootstrapping, I think the most important thing is like the more things you do yourself or like within the founder team, you don't have to do it on your own. So I did it as a single founder. I had a little backup by my wife, obviously. So mostly I spent the time on Kartenmacherei. And so if you're like a single founder or in a founder team, like, use your time wisely, because that's the money, actually, right? Anything, you can learn a lot of things in a short time frame, especially when you're under pressure. And, you know, starting a business and being dependent on that business, if you're a founder mentality, you will feel that pressure, and you will, that's a lot of intrinsic motivation. And you use that, right? Use that pressure, use that skin in the game, because that actually helps you. And then you can learn a lot of things in a much faster way. Done that at university, most likely, because yeah, you didn't have the pressure there. You didn't have any skin in the game. There was no, you know, there was no real requirement. But now you actually depend on that one. So if you learn a lot of things, so I, for myself, I kind of like learned to do designs. I haven't been a designer. I'd used that Adobe software InDesign the first time. But after a couple of weeks, I was like kind of like pro, really designing cards and exporting all the cards that our designers, we had some external designers, sent to us, right? And yeah, I think that's something I was like, you know, doing a lot of manual stuff until late in the night with a lot of red wine, obviously, you know, with a lot of shortcuts, like things that the team's not doing at today anymore, which is automated, I did by myself, by hand, right? A lot of time I spent on this one. So in the beginning, I just try to do a lot of things by myself. That also helps you to learn a lot, right? The more things you do by yourself, you better understand how it works, and you can actually try to automate it, and you can actually, you know, then hand it over to someone else specialized on a specific job, and you can explain it to them better, right? If you never did that before, it's pretty hard to tell someone how to do it, right? At least as a starting point. So I would always go for try to do it yourself, right? I think that's really, really important. And never underestimate, you know, the power of you to learn under pressure.
Yeah, that's some practical advice, I would say. And in the long term, I would assume that I am benefit as a founder from it, because, as you said, I understand my business model way better than without gaining this practical experience. That's sound advice, I would say. Do you have any points to add to how to bootstrap? Is there anything else you would like to pass on?
First of all, just be creative. I think that's the most important. Don't give up, right? I mean, it might feel now in a situation where like Corona really came into the world, when you just wanted to, you just took the step to really, you know, found your own business. You might have left your job, or you left university. You just convinced your parents, your wife, your husband to actually start something, right? And then Corona came. It's like, oh, fuck it. I mean, honestly, now I just want to start. I just put everything. I put all my trust in myself, and I went on the street and I did it. And Corona came, and I just want to tell you that just don't stop, right? It's going to be that. I mean, if you worry about it, become an entrepreneur, even a successful entrepreneur, then you're going to have a lot of these situations. It might be a little more crazy than the average situation an entrepreneur faces, but there will be a lot of situations where you think it's over, right? It's not going to happen. It's not going to fly. It's not going to work. I will lose money. I have to stop it, everything. But I think that's really, really one important step is like resilience, right? Really don't stop in the first place. There will be a lot of hurdles that you have to jump over. And especially in that situation, and see that as a chance. See it as a chance, because a lot of things, a lot of opportunities are rising. Even though your business model at the moment might look like completely deteriorated, but I mean, there's a lot of opportunities to pivot now, right? And as a small startup, you're much more flexible than a big company. So really consider that one, and then really try to do very small, you know, interviews with potential customers and figure out like new problems, new solutions, right? And then the last thing I would say is, I'm not saying that you don't need money to survive, right? I mean, bootstrapping doesn't mean that you don't need money at all. So you need some money, especially for you to survive, you know, for a flat, maybe not a big office, maybe not the first employees. You can do that on your own in the first place. But you want to think about like maybe, you know, asking friends and family, looking for a job on the side, or maybe not canceling your job on the side, to save some money and to earn some money. It's obviously it might stress you out, but yeah, I mean, you know, becoming an entrepreneur is just not easy. Let's be honest. So if you're not 100% in it, it's going to be tough for you to become really successful. At least that's my point of view. So when I started, I asked my dad and my grandfather to give me a small loan, needed some time to convince them, but then in the end they gave the money to me. It was like, I think 30K, which is not a lot of money, but you know, for starting a business, that's a lot of money. So like in the end, to me today, it's not a lot of money. But at that point of time, that meant to me, hey, I could survive a couple of more months, or I could pay a external developer to build my whole shop, right? So that's cool. And I think a lot of people that we know might give us a couple of money, and not because to earn some money in the first place, but rather, you know, they believe in you. So be bold. I mean, that's something that I think is a very important trait of successful entrepreneurs. You need to have some persuasion. You need to persuade, you know, partners, banks sometimes, or even family and friends and first customers and employees, you know, to follow your route, because you have an idea, you have a solution in mind, and you have to push that through somewhat, right? So yeah, trust yourself, risk it, and don't give up too early.
I'd like to touch upon the point of persuasion, because I think one very important step which comes before persuading others is to persuade yourself. And to have the confidence to say, okay, I go out now and I ask my family, I ask my friends for a loan for 30,000 euros. You don't just do that out of fun. You don't wake up in the morning, I guess, and say, okay, I'm going to build an online shop for personalized stationery for wedding cards or birth cards. Can you recall the point when you knew, okay, this is legit, I'm all in. I commit to this, and now I go out and I'm going to build it.
I actually remember the one point, because I guess there was one point. So I think it was a period of half a year. I kind of like had to convince my wife, because I wanted to give up a job that gave us a lot of money, right? And my family has an entrepreneur background, so my father had a business. And I was kind of like used to the risk around having your own business and running your own company. Not saying that I was like an entrepreneur, right? But I could experience it with my father directly next to me. My wife didn't. So like in the first place, I had to convince my wife to actually take that risk. And we also had a small son, like 1 or 2 years ago. He was 1 or 2 years old. And that's where the idea came from. It was pretty hard to convince her to take that risk. But in that situation, my father was one of the persons who backed me up, right? Who said, like, I talked to your wife as well, and he talked to her, and he kind of like made sure that, like, with the loan and with the support of mine, that he trusted me to actually do that. And I think that a lot of people also out there that you might have got to know during studies or during work that trust you, and then that would actually maybe invest in you, kind of, right? And so don't underestimate that, right? And it might take a couple of incidents, like a couple of people to talk to, right? But in the end, try to convince some people. But I guess this moment of truth where you actually decide to do that's not one moment, right? Every day you decide to go more into that situation, right? You know, people will actually start business in their mind before, and they will do some interviews and so on. They will start working on it, and they will have a job, or they will study. They will have. It's not like you stop something and then you start thinking about founding your own business. I think very few people actually do that. It's rather something that happens, and you might have deep in yourself, you have a dream or a wish to actually be free. So for me, it was really important to be free. Really, I wanted to take my own decisions. I wanted to change the world. I wanted to change something. I wanted to follow my own decision and do that. I mean, trust yourself, but don't expect it to be easy, and don't expect it to be only one point of time where you have to decide. You have to decide every day, every week again, to put a lot of effort in it. And there's always a lot of downside. There's a lot of risk. There's a lot of negative moments, right? And that's really part of being an entrepreneur. But there's a lot of upside as well. And the biggest upside in the first place is freedom. You know, if you have the power to design your freedom, your own freedom, and you really use that, then go for it and try it out, right? I think no one really would try to be really an entrepreneur said afterwards, I haven't actually talked to anyone. He said, like, it wasn't worth trying. So what do you have to lose, actually, right?
I think that's a good question to ask. So I know that, let's change the topic a little bit, because in the beginning, you said, okay, one downside of bootstrapping is you don't get famous overnight. You don't get these crazy press releases and the taps on the shoulder. So I think there are a lot of companies out there which actually bootstrap, but which might not be known to the public. So do you know any other companies which had a similar approach and were successful?
I think there are a lot of them out there. So mostly you read about, Series A, financing rounds, maybe exits, not so many, obviously, IPOs, and then you read a lot about, obviously, also failure, right? Because that's part of the game. And but then there's a lot of hidden champions, or even not so hidden anymore, where you don't know that they're actually bootstrapped. And then what most people don't know is like these overnight successes took a couple of years, and mostly these years they bootstrapped, right? So people did something, and a lot of famous stories. And it's to me, bootstrapping doesn't mean that you bootstrap, like that you don't take external money forever, right? It means that you do that for a significant amount of time, but it also depends on your business model. So not all the business models are feasible to bootstrap forever. So if you build a social network, if you build a platform, it's almost it's impossible to do that without external money. Let's face it, right? So no, Mark Zuckerberg wouldn't have built Facebook without external money. Just impossible. There are a couple of companies that surprised me in the first place, that they were bootstrapped, right? So you might know Wayfair, which is a huge furniture company. And there's a couple of approaches that they, I think, did different in the first place. So when they started, they didn't, the company wasn't called Wayfair. And they started with a lot of SEO domains. And out of that, at some point of time, right, they built one big URL and one platform. But that wasn't the thing in the first place. So like when you build the... So what you see a lot of times now is, you know, people have a big vision, right? And then they do the pitch deck. And in that pitch deck, they show, hey, we built that vision. And then they get an investor and then they try to build the vision without knowing how to get there. But if you build the vision, the risk of, you know, getting to the vision is quite high that you don't get there, right? So maybe you start with a small problem in a big market, but with a small first customer segment. So some early adopters, like, I mean, that's pretty obvious that you should do that. But most people actually don't do that, right? They want to build the right, you know, the big vision in the first place. And I think Wayfair is a very great example to start with something, learn from it, and then from there go step by step to something really huge. I mean, they made something like 6.8 billion euros in revenue. I think the last figure that was made public, right? I think 2018 or 17 it was. So, I mean, that's huge, right? Then you've got someone like GoPro. I mean, almost everyone knows GoPro, at least the cameras, like for diving and for skiing and everything, like these fun cameras. And I didn't know that, and I didn't expect it. That's hardware. I mean, would you expect to be a hardware company to bootstrap for a couple of years? I think they now sold some part, or they got an investor, but I think they bootstrap at least for a couple of years, as far as I understand. So that's super interesting. And then you find typically a lot of software as a service companies, right? So Atlassian, not known to everyone, like everyone who's like working in a tech company should know Atlassian, or at least Jira, which is the main product, which is like a project management tool for developers. Really huge. I think I guess they're from Australia, if I remember right. And there's MailChimp. That's like a lot of people get emails. A lot of these emails are sent by MailChimp. I think they're probably the biggest mailing company, right? So I think there are a lot of companies out there, and you obviously have to look in their business model, but also like some of them just been creative. If I remember right, then Wayfair is like mostly doing dropshipping, right? So that means dropshipping compared to you. I mean, if you build an e-commerce company, you need a lot of money for the furniture, let's say, that you put on your stock, right? That you have to spend money on. If you're good, with some traction, you might get a bank to actually finance that, but not in the first place necessarily, right? So you need an investor to do that. If you do dropshipping, means you find partners that you cooperate with, and they're going to send it out. It might not be the best convenience in the first place, but it saves you a lot of working capital, right? A lot of money you have to invest. So that's again, so I think there are a lot of approaches that you can do if you be creative, right? And spend some time on being creative and finding a way to spend less money, that you actually can do that a lot, right? Which normally would make sense in any case. But if there's a lot of money in the market, right, people are just not, they don't have an incentive to actually do that, right? They just, you know, grow, put marketing out there, and then you forget to be efficient, right? So I guess in my point of view, what all these companies have kind of like in common, they took their time, right? And they didn't rush into a big market and a big vision, but they took their time to build the core product, find a solution, and then find customers who pay money, and then scale from, you know, these paying customers, because that's actually the best case. I once heard from a lean startup meetup a case that really, really was to me even surprising. That was a legal software for lawyers, and as far as I remember, it was kind of like a database for very, very special type of lawyers, right? And the person who actually built that business, he didn't have any money. So, but for building the database, he would have needed a lot of money, right? So what he did is he pitched the solution to a lot of customers, right? Lawyers, obviously, and he got a lot of money just from pitching it before actually doing something. And then with that money, he built the software. Or there's other companies out there who build a solution for the first client, really a customized solution. Out of that, they build a system, and with that system, they earn now millions, right? I think that's super interesting. When I tell that to people who are just in the middle of the process of, you know, doing that, and I tell them the opportunity to actually do that, it's just not as sexy, right? It's not as glamorous. It's much more glamorous to follow the vision straightforward, to build the platform right in the first place. But why? Yeah, it takes a lot of time, and there might be some other competitors. That's a lot of, you know, they stress themselves out because there might be a competitor with a lot more money around the corner, and then they lost. I'm not sure that is going to be the case. I think if you build the product in the right way with the right economics, like really efficient, and it works, you're much better prepared for growth than the other way around. You put a lot of money into it, grow, and then realize, oh my God, I'm losing money everywhere in my value chain, right?
Yeah, sounds reasonable. these were some great examples. I think you can all have to look at the business models. I think that makes a lot of sense. There's so much research out there and content. There's probably a lot of the founding stories of the Wayfairs and the GoPros of this world. So check out how they did it, because that's the creative part has already been done. You can apply some of these things to yourself. I think that's definitely really important to put a
and don't forget what's in it for you.
Yeah.
And don't forget what's in it for you, right? If you do a better job in the first place, even though you need external money, you will keep higher shares. And that's what every founder wants. They want to stay in control of the company, right? We did a survey on that one. And like everyone mentioned, yeah, that's the most important thing for me is I want to stay in control of my own company. Obviously, the most important reason for most founders is actually to build a company they have control of, right? To be free. So if you got investors, nothing against the investors, but you lose kind of like control, you lose your freedom, right? There's someone else who's going to tell you what to do, at least in some aspects, right? So if you don't want to lose the freedom, and it's a question of how many shares you have, obviously, and what type of investor you get at which point of time. So really go for bootstrapping for a while. I think that's the opportunity in this crisis, right? It will force a lot of startups to actually bootstrap. And my assumption is that in 2 or 3 years, we will see a lot of startups with a much more stable core product that works because they had to bootstrap, because they didn't have the money to spend a lot on marketing on a shitty product. So now they have to build a great product first and iterate on it before they actually can put a lot of marketing dollars and euros on it, right? So I guess that's going to be, I love optimistic scenarios, but if I think about an optimistic scenario, I think we see a lot of like better prepared startups in the first place with less money. So less money is not necessarily bad, at least in the first 1 or 2 years, right?
Yeah, makes sense. Great. Christoph, I know you have a tight schedule, and we're running behind time, so I don't want to keep you any longer, but is there any sort of last advice you would like to share with the founders and who are listening to the videocast right now?
I think we almost touched everything. I think in the last 40 minutes. But I think the core to bootstrapping is you don't get an external appraisal. I think is the right word, right? So no one's clapping on the shoulders. And I think you have to make yourself free from that, right? Everyone loves to get, you know, to be told that you did a great job. But if you bootstrap, you're more on your own. You might be in a founder's team, but I think you just have to get along with you and your customers and the problem and the potential solution. And I can just, emphasize on that one. It's a tough time, right? You feel kind of like socially isolated. Around you, people actually get a new title. They get a raise in the salary. People you study with, they will look at you and they're going to tell you it's not going to work out. be strong, right? Be resilient. Don't give a shit about what people tell you, you know, what you should do. You have to be close to yourself. You have to be strong in yourself. You have to trust yourself. I think if you don't do that, if you can't do that, and you might call me or Fabi, but or give us, send us a text, and we're going to tell you that you're going to do that. But that's, I think that's the most important thing, that you actually trust yourself. And then you can handle the crisis. Then you see the opportunity within the crisis, right? And even bootstrapping is an opportunity. It's an opportunity to not get money from a VC too early. So I still guess, you know, trust yourself, be resilient.
Great. These are some fantastic closing words. And if you're not excited to start your own company now and go out there, well, maybe you should listen to the podcast again. Great. Christoph, maybe. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for the great questions, Fabi.
If you enjoyed this episode, I'd like you to join our LinkedIn group. The group is called Goodpreneurs. In this group, we connect a growing community of founders that understood that their personal growth defines the boundaries of their company's potential. We talk open about failures and the hurdles we have to overcome as founders. Because building a company from scratch isn't easy, nor glamorous in the first place. It's hard work, long hours, and stressful times with risky decisions. At Goodpreneurs, we provide founders a source of inspiration and feedback to reflect better and grow as an entrepreneur, and thus changing the world for the better.